D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to the Geeks Menagerie, Retro Comics, Episode 2, Wolverine. I'm Green Lantern.
And this is Roy Fulker.
Back again this month with another look at old school comic books. For this episode, we decided to go with the Chris Claremont and Frank Miller's Wolverine miniseries. This book originally came out in, 1982?
Is it really that old?
Yep, 1982.
Yeah, it is quite literally one of the greatest classic stories for a comic book hero, in my opinion, ever written.
Well, it's a simple story, it's fast-paced.
And, yeah, the collaboration between Claremont and Miller is just utterly impressive, and their ability to actually define a character who, up to this point, was basically some weird PG version of a rabid killing machine.
Why don't you give us a rundown of the synopsis of the four-issue miniseries?
Well, the miniseries itself is basically sort of a snapshot and behind-the-scenes look at who Wolverine is on a personal level, and it's something that hadn't actually been addressed in any of the comics leading up to this miniseries. And so we finally get to see, you know, what makes Wolverine tick, and sort of, and see more of a depth of character and an understanding of who he is.
The one nice thing with this storyline, I don't care what anybody thinks about Chris Claremont, his early work was awesome, and this is a great example of that. He does a lot of subplots within the story, which is pretty cool considering it's only a 4-issue limited series. You know, you got little bit of government intrigue with Asano. You've got Shinjin Yoshida, who is using Wolverine to help assassinate one of his rivals, while at the same time trying to keep him out of his daughter's life. And then you have the intrigue of the Hand being involved with the whole storyline, too.
And the whole development of this new character, Yuriko, and sort of how she's the best of the assassins, but at the same time, she is nowhere near on par with Wolverine himself.
And the interesting part is that she has no connection to the Hand either, which I thought was kind of a niche, working as an independent assassin.
Well, nope, she wasn't an independent assassin. She's a family assassin.
Oh, that's what the difference was.
Yep, she is owned by Shinjin Yoshida, and that's where it becomes a big issue in that, in her attempt to seduce Wolverine, she actually ends up falling in love with him. And in the end, she can't follow through on the attempt to kill him, and thereby putting herself against not only the Hand, but also the Yoshida clan.
Yep.
And it also disgraces her and makes her basically a rogue assassin. Then you have Noboru, who, throughout the entire story, I don't think they ever really clarify who he is or what connection his family has with bailing out or helping Shinjin Yoshida regain his empire.
Yeah, it's implied that he literally married his daughter off to him to acquire wealth, to expand his hand in whatever organizations or companies that he wanted to control to help boost his empire.
And by doing that, and then eliminating the last of the major crime lords, Katsuyori, he was going to be able to finally take over the Japanese syndicate. That's pretty much the entire overarching story that's going on.
With a lot of sweet combat, assassination attempts, and an awesome death at the very end of the book.
Yes.
Along with a wedding invitation.
And what I love about the first comic is while Claremont's going through and building up and sort of defining Wolverine or redefining, really, who Wolverine is as a character, the context in which that entire episode runs along is actually a lie, in that Wolverine comes away thinking that Shinjin really was trying to kill him, when in fact, all Shinjin was trying to do was disgrace Wolverine, but at the same time anger him enough that he'd be willing to help Yuriko with whatever she asked him to do. At that point, we end up popping into the second book, where it's more or less the development of Yuriko and Wolverine's relationship. Now, is there anything that actually happens in that one, other than those two running around and killing people?
Well, it essentially starts out with, which you find out later, Shinjin sends the Hand after Wolverine and, what's her name, Narubu?
Yuriko.
Nope, no, not Yuriko.
Yeah.
Asano.
Yuriko's, no, they never send him after Asano.
Okay, who's the assassin chick?
Yuriko.
You sure?
1,000% positive.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting my names mixed up again. Anyway, it starts out with Shinjin sending the Hand after Yuriko and Wolverine. And so that's how the book starts out. Wolverine has a little bit of fun with it, and then, yeah, you're right, they spend pretty much the rest of the issue in bed. And that's also where you find out that Yuriko meets with Shinjin, and you find out that, you know, that she is a family assassin working for him and making sure that she gets Wolverine to do whatever she needs him to do to get the mission accomplished. Now, I'm a little confused about that part. Was it she just wanted Wolverine with her because she didn't want her with Mariko? Or was it that Shinjin wanted her to do whatever she could to distract him?
Shinjin actually wanted him to kill this head Katsuyori because no one he had sent after him was able to actually successfully kill him. And he didn't think that Yuriko could pull it off.
Okay.
And Yuriko, I think, took a little bit of offense to that. And then on top of that, Shinjin also saw it as an opportunity to solidify the separation between Wolverine and Mariko, because he knew that Mariko was going to be right there in front of Katsuyori when Wolverine had to kill him.
Right, and that's a nice little twist to the story, too, because you see the reaction on Mariko's face when she realizes just how brutal Wolverine actually is.
And that's actually one of the sort of plot flaws in the storyline, is that Mariko is very, very traditionalistic in that sort of way, and she is not a squeamish woman. And you see that at the end of the story. So this little scene, the way it played out, she would have realized that those assassins were there for her, and that Wolverine killed them to save, and ultimately saved her life. So I think that it was kind of convenient to play it off that way and develop it that way for the story, but realistically, I don't think that she actually would have been, you know, thoroughly disgusted by his actions.
Now, going into issue 3, we're pretty much continuing the same storyline with Yuriko and Wolverine getting drunk and partying, and it's implied that there's always a shadow of death hanging over him with the Hand assassins that keep following him around town.
Yep, and then there's the scene where Yuriko gets him completely plastered and has him lay down on a train track, but even completely drunk, he's still able to dodge a bullet train.
The one thing I really like about this particular issue is the fact that Wolverine has a dream while he's in a drunken state, where he's in the Shogunate era of Japan. And by the end of it, he's taken down by a bunch of arrows, and Mariko is the one that finishes him off with an arrow right to the face.
With her father standing directly behind her.
Yep.
It's kind of a fun scene, and follows up with Wolverine so completely out of it that Yuriko has to fend off the hand that attack. And just as she's waking up Wolverine, all he's able to utter is Mariko, not realizing that he's saying that because he sees Mariko killing him. Yuriko gets all ticked off and storms off and goes back to his apartment, which leads to her ultimate mistake.
Yep, because at this point, she makes the mistake of murdering Asano, the Japanese government agent, which really sets Wolverine off, because those two were friends.
Yep, and I honestly believe that if she had not done that, Wolverine would have left Japan and never gone back.
Yep.
But because of that mistake, he now has to kill Yuriko, which basically she ends up chasing him into a trap set by the hand so that he'll end up going after Shinjin in order to save both of their lives. So at this point, the only way Yuriko is going to live is if Shinjin dies.
Right.
And that's really kind of the build-up to the end of the third episode, is Wolverine basically standing in the wreckage of all of the dead hand with Yuriko run off, and him trying to figure out what is he doing here, what does he need to do to basically resolve this situation and to resolve himself. And all is built up on the fact that he's now figured out that Shinjin is actually the one responsible for all of this.
Yeah, in the beginning of the fourth issue, Wolverine starts going after some of Shinjin's associates to make sure that a message gets back to him that he's coming after Shinjin.
Blah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love sort of the desperate, angsty look that Frank Miller does in the one drug dealer running away from Wolverine. They sort of painted them as these victims of this diabolical creature that's hunting down and assassinating them all.
And they're all very upset that their money and drugs gets torn up by Wolverine's claws.
Yep.
Oh, my heroin! Where'd it go?
Then, after all of this, Shinjin starts getting yelled at by all of his crime lord cronies, and he's like, I've assigned this task to my finest ninja. Wolverine is as good as dead. And just as he utters that, a package shows up with a outfit of an assassin and a note, simply saying that Wolverine killed the assassin and is coming after him.
The end of the book essentially is what everybody's been waiting for, the final showdown before Shinjin and Wolverine. And Shinjin uses the Yoshida family sword to fight Wolverine. And they go toe-to-toe, and in the very end, Wolverine's claws go right through Shinjin's face to end the book.
Well,
or to end the conflict, I should say.
You did overstep one minor thing, and that's when Mariko figures out what's going on. And just as she figures it out is when Yuriko's finally caught, which ends up ultimately saving Yuriko's life, is Mariko confronting her father. And the delay lasts just long enough for Wolverine to catch up with him.
Oh, and her dirtbag husband dies too.
Oh, yeah.
Mariko's.
Set of claws right to the gut.
No,
it's spikes.
Throwing knives.
Yep. Yuriko does it, and then at the last minute decides, she'll let Mariko live because it's already bad enough Wolverine wants her dead.
And another cool side note, back in the unfortunate 90s, they released a whole bunch of X-Men, Uncanny X-Men action figures, mm-hmm. and one of the Wolverine figures actually has the Yoshida family sword with Wolverine in his yellow and brown costume.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I have it. It's packed away in a box somewhere. I know you're shocked.
Not at all. Oh, and that reminds me, one of the greatest scenes in this entire comic is on page 91. It's a silhouette of Shinjin with his back to Wolverine, holding the family katana, and Wolverine crouching on his tiptoes in just this incredibly, what has to be a painful stance, just waiting.
Yeah.
And yeah, the fight is just intense. Wolverine looks like he... Well, Wolverine, if he was a human being, would have just been slaughtered by Shinjin. But ultimately, there's just no fighting Wolverine.
Yeah, when he's focused and not drugged, it's it's quite a bit different story.
Yep, and he knows, or he has mastered the art of being willing to take a hit just so he can get close enough to do that fatal strike.
Well, the nice thing is, too, is they don't actually show the claws going into Shinjin's face. The scene shows his hand coming up to his face, and then they pan back to Wolverine's eyes over his arm, and then you see the words, schnicked.
And the best part is, you know, you look at the scene before that, you see Wolverine taking that hit to his neck.
Yep.
And you see his eyes just clear, staring back at him. And then you see Shinjin's face, same sort of look that Wolverine's giving him. And then when they go down to that scene where Wolverine's putting his claws into his face, Wolverine's eyes are just blood red.
Well, the nice thing, too, and this is another commentary on the art style for this book, these two pages, there's, let's see, five horizontal panels on each page, and there's no words. There's no dialogue whatsoever, except for the snicked of his claws.
Very well done, very action-packed, and a straightforward give-and-take between the two of them. And it actually goes... It starts a little bit earlier where they have...
Yeah, it's almost four pages. Actually, it is four pages.
And even then, after all of that's over, it switches over from the horizontal frames to the vertical frames. And these long, dramatic scenes with dialogue between Wolverine and Mariko discussing sort of the ultimate outcome between the two of them.
And then the final page of the book is back at the X-Men's mansion slash school in upstate New York as they open up an invitation to Wolverine and Mariko's wedding.
And I remember and love the sort of classic appearance of the X-Men in that era. And I still don't get why Storm has cat eyes. But other than that, it's just so cartoony. The way that they're drawn, it's so cool.
Yeah, and then once again, like we mentioned earlier, the story continues in Uncanny X-Men, 172, 173. They go to Japan for the wedding, and there's a nice little confrontation with Silver Samurai, but we're not going to go into those books, at least not at this time. But so, yeah, it's a good, solid story. You don't need to read the Uncanny X-Men books to get the whole story for what the meaning was. It's just a nice little crossover, kind of an additional story to kind of finalize the whole premise behind the miniseries.
And it brings a little bit of closure and further development into the ongoing characters.
And the best line written right on the invitation, "Hey Elf, don't forget the beer."
And the beauty of it is that this was the backdrop for the new movie coming. And well, the story itself sounds like it's going to be changed dramatically, and somehow they're going to bring in at least the Silver Samurai portion of the story into the mainline story. It looks like yeah, they picked a nice, solid story as long as they don't go crazy with making oddball mutants in it.
Yeah, and since they're keeping pretty tight-lipped about the story or releasing any information about it, so we're gonna have to wait and see what happens.
Yep. All we get are a few random stills here and there. And I don't know, has the trailer come out for it yet?
No trailer, not even a teaser. The closest they've come is just a teaser image of Wolverine on a rooftop.
I've seen, there's a couple of them actually inside a building in Japan is what it looked like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's...
So yeah, there's been more than one teaser image, I should say. Yeah.
And now this is slated for summer of this year, isn't it?
Should be July, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's actually amazing, considering all of the trailers and previews that we've been seeing that are, you know, 6 months, 9 months out. And then Wolverine, well, considering what happened with the last Wolverine, I can understand why they're tight-lipped. I would be a little bit scared after releasing that colossal of a we'll call it a mistake.
Exactly. Yeah, it should be, it looks like July 26th is the expected release date.
Awesome. That will be a good summer, summer vacation right there. 2-hour vacation. I think that pretty much covers it for this episode.
Yeah, that should do it for the show this week. And just wanted to remind everybody, be sure you swing by our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thegeeksmenagerie. Also, head over to the blog at thegeeksmenagerie.com. How many other links do we have? We also have the geek community over at Google Plus. We also have our forums over at the D20 Radio Network, and you can find us listed under the Variety Podcast section, or there's links on the blog to go directly to our forums.
And don't forget to stop over and check out Eons from Gamer Nation Studios, and we'll have a link on our blog. It is this cool, interesting Kickstarter program for a resource gathering game, board game. Looks like it's somewhat similar to something like Power Grid or Alhambra. And by saying that, it doesn't look like it rips off of either of them. It's just kind of that style of game for 2 to 5 people. And a quick blurb from it. It's a strategy game where each player takes on a role of a universal architect competing to create and form the universe on a cosmic scale. Sounds pretty interesting.
Well, that should do it for this week's show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.